Hey there, it's Kaysunga, and I have a really cool announcement for y'all. Headspace is now offering mental health coaching in the Headspace app. You can connect with a trained expert for live, text-based one-on-one support on your time from anywhere. Whether they're helping you cope with daily stress and anxiety or supporting you through big life events like loss or relationship hurdles, your coach will draw from clinically validated tools to help you reach any mental health goals. You can text a mental health coach for just $99.99 a month. Just sign up on the Headspace app or at headspace.com/coaching.
I feel like I have a bigger purpose than just to teach celebrities how to dance on Dancing with the Stars. Like, the ballroom world is like a man's world in a way where everything is like dictated to you. So you're supposed to look like this. You have to do this. You have to say this. I, with that, didn't really have a lot of self-esteem. And I think that stems from what happened to me as a kid.
From Headspace Studios, this is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. I say this at the top of every episode because they're all emotional and raw. But in this episode, we'll be discussing childhood sexual abuse. Please take care while listening. If you've ever seen an episode of Dancing with the Stars, then you've probably seen Cheryl Burke. She's been one of the professional dancers on the show for 26 seasons, and she was the first female professional dancer to win the show. She's also an author, TV host, and a model. I'm excited to share every conversation on this series, but this episode is special. Cheryl is so fun, energetic, and really honest. She's been doing the hard work of self-examination, and she has this amazing self-awareness that she's gained through difficult life experiences and years of therapy. Her thoughts about forgiveness are some of the most real and insightful that I've ever heard. Cheryl's forgiveness story starts when she was just a kid.
I was a very quiet kid. I think it was the trauma from my parents' divorce to just being confused. And so therefore, I just kept to myself. And I was just very observant about the life surrounding me. So my mom and dad got divorced when I was 2 years old. And my mom's, she's from the Philippines. So she has always, you know, she was raised with a huge family, raised in poverty, and her mission in life and her goal was just to get out of the Philippines. And she just wanted to build a life for herself and never wanted to be codependent on a man. And so she created this business that she always like basically had this idea since she was a little girl that my real dad invested in. And long story short, talk about like rags to riches story. That's my mother's story. With that though, unfortunately came, you know, her never really being home, right? Because she's working 24 hours of the day, basically. We had a live-in nanny from the Philippines who, you know, she was amazing. I mean, she was like she acted as my mother, basically. But she couldn't drive. So they had to hire somebody else, hire help. And so this man, he was a retired mailman, actually, you know, molested my sister and I for a few years. This man would, you know, after school pick me up and he would touch me. And my older stepsister, you know, I still don't know what happened to my stepsister to this day. Like, she can't talk about it at all, which is, I understand totally. But, you know, it's like they, you know, the grooming of it. That's the scary part. This man was like really good at brainwashing us to where we felt safe, but we also knew that there was something wrong. Honestly, the only reason why he ended up in jail was because he tried to do this to my sister, my stepsister's friend, who then went home and ran to her parents and told them.
The man who had molested Cheryl and others was arrested and eventually sentenced to 24 years in prison. Cheryl was just 9 at the time of the trial, and she made the decision to testify against him.
I've interviewed a couple different people who experienced sexual abuse at a young age and talked about not telling their parents, not telling other people, not talking about it. And then you went from that experience to going to court and testifying. What was that experience like for you?
Oh my gosh. I just remember how nervous I was. They wouldn't let my mom in, which terrified me. I mean, just being alone and having to face this man, like right in front of me. I just remember seeing though, all the victims that came along with it. So my sister never testified. She didn't want to, but he also did the same thing to all of his nieces and other family members as well. I think there was a total of like 25 of us.
Wow. My gosh.
Yeah. So I just know that I was still that really quiet, shy girl with zero confidence. And all I remember, honestly, Catherine, is I remember taking oath and I had like my sweater sleeve was covering my hand and then we had to redo it again. And that was it. That's all I remember. Like I feel, and this is where like I'm still healing because I had to look at this guy. And at the time I almost felt like there was nothing he did was wrong. Like it was a bunch of emotions where it's like, but he didn't hurt me physically. Do you know what I mean? It was really confusing to me at the time as to why I'm putting this guy in. Exactly. And also I was blaming myself for the situation. Like, you know, me saying at times, well, you let it happen, you know, but that's not, I was a kid.
Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between dancing and the abuse that you experienced?
Yeah. So, you know, I was very quiet, as I mentioned, growing up, but I wasn't great at school, right? So I wouldn't say that I was book smart. I was definitely more street smart. But my mom made sure that I was in other extracurricular activities from like basketball, soccer. Like she knew after talking to the therapist that she had me go to, she knew that I wasn't deaf, like what she thought I was. She thought like I had to go to hearing specialists. Like she did the whole thing. And they're like, no, she just has gone through trauma, you know? And sometimes when kids go through trauma, you want to involve them in other extracurricular activities, like in the arts, because it'll help them express themselves. And so dance, out of everything else that she put me in, dance was the only thing I never complained about. So I started as a ballerina from age 4 to 11, and literally just my hips started growing at an early age. I became a woman at a very young age, and I just did not feel like I fit in at all. You know, no one else had hips. So I had boobs and hips, and I was just like, these tights are just not doing me any favors. And I just didn't like it at all. And then my mom and stepdad actually got into ballroom dancing because they were trying to find something for the family to do. And ballroom dancing, that sounds like is for old people. Like, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to ballroom dance. And then I went to a ballroom dance competition and I saw kids my age with their rhinestones and makeup. And I was like, oh, this is great. And so I just totally took it to the next level. And I put all of my focus into ballroom dancing, and it was my way. And I noticed it was my way of expressing myself. Like I would be a whole nother person on the dance floor than like right now, just talking, let's say.
By the time she was 13, Cheryl was traveling the world dancing in ballroom competitions. Dance was a way for Cheryl to express herself. It was an outlet where she didn't have to use her words. It also helps her connect with her body. When many of her peers were applying to colleges, Cheryl moved to New York City to start her dance career. While she was starting this exciting new chapter of her life, she still found herself thinking about the abuse she endured as a child.
Prior to your abuser passing away, you talked about him being released from jail and just the fear of, yes, you know, him showing up somewhere, you running into him. And now that he has passed away, would there be anything that you feel like you've had left unsaid to say to him?
Well, that's a great question. He actually did go to my dad as soon as he got released from jail. He went up to my father and then said, I never did that to your kids. So the man is sick. He was sick, mentally sick, you know, and I feel like, you know, my dad obviously threatened him and said, get out of here, or else I'm going to call the police. And the scary part was that I have a little half sister from my mom and stepdad, and she went to Menlo High School, and he was actually put right across the street from her high school. And so like with that came like so many mixed emotions. And then obviously all this press came out and I got broken into in my first home that I bought. And it was just like really scary because I was like, oh my God, what's happening here? There were so many scenarios going on in my head. But I And back to your question, you know, I would just, if he was actually here today, I think I would have to forgive him face to face. And just, then I would know for sure that I have forgiven and then I can move on.
That's so powerful to be able to say that, you know, even if the person's alive or dead, just to be able to feel confident the way that you do in your forgiveness journey, I think is such a powerful and empowering thing to say and to realize and acknowledge for yourself.
Yeah, I think it also helps though too, and thank you for that. But I think it also helps that knowing he was obviously sick, for him to think that he had the balls to do that and go to my father's dental practice and say, I never did that to your kids. Obviously he truly believes that or believed that, you know, sometimes you don't look at the mental health issue of all of it. You just see him as a perpetrator and you don't see him as like maybe potentially just sick in the head. And this is what I'm still doing and I will do for as long as I live, is just to understand what that entails exactly. Like, why do people do that? Why do people do bad things?
This is one of those questions that doesn't have a clear answer. Accepting the fact that we might never know why someone hurt us is so difficult, and it can prevent some of us from moving forward in our lives. These feelings can be overwhelming, so we avoid them at all costs.
It was so scary for me to sit in my shit, excuse my language, but to sit in stillness without just, like, I was addicted to productivity, so I always had something to do. My to-do list was like impossible to complete, but that was the goal, to never have to sit still and to deal with my actual problems.
Staying busy distracted Cheryl from the emotions she didn't want to deal with. And it also paid off in her career. When she was 22, she was scouted by ABC for a role on a new reality TV show based in Los Angeles, Dancing with the Stars. When Cheryl landed that role, she became busier than ever, and she put her forgiveness journey on the back burner.
When I didn't forgive was when, you know, I would numb myself. So I would drink a lot, you know, when I first moved to Los Angeles, and I went from living in New York, a competitive ballroom lifestyle, which is living like an Olympian. And then moving to Los Angeles, you know, I never went to college. I just wanted to focus on my dancing career. But moving here was kind of like a, whoa, like this was like my college years in the beginning when I first moved here in 2006. And so therefore, you know, I drank way too much. And until I decided to become sober about 2.5 years ago was when I was able to really forgive. I'm so good at numbing. Like, it's almost like, I swear I'm a master at it, even sober.
And so when you became sober 2 years ago, how quickly after that would you say that you focused on your forgiveness journey with your abuser from your childhood?
So I started taking self-development like online courses. And with every person that teaches any course on self-development or the study of the brain and emotions, talk about forgiveness. And so I would say about a little over a year ago was when I had to really come to like head to head with it. And it was really tough. Well, it actually had to start even before that. It was my father. You know, I felt like I had all of these, I felt like my first memory as a kid was 2 years old, seeing my father with another woman. With that, I just felt let down a lot. He moved to Thailand from the Bay Area. And like, there's many times where like, I considered him my father, but then he wouldn't act on that. So there was all of that baggage I needed to clear first. I needed to go in chronological order. And with my dad, I had to just accept him for who he was and make peace with that and just know that he's loving me to his ability. You know, whether that meets my definition of what a father should be like, it's irrelevant. And if I wanted to, again, make peace with the situation and love him, as I said I loved him, you know, when he was alive, I needed to forgive him for, you know, his for my abandonment issues, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I moved on to my molester. I felt guilty for forgiving. I had so many different emotions. I think it was forgiving myself for even trying to think that I was blaming myself for the situation. Like, I think it was really about being kind to myself and just forgiving that side of it. And then it was the whole process of forgiving him as well. It's still tough, but I'm also not going to be that person who says, oh, I'm healed. You know what I mean? It's work. It's just work on myself every single day. Every time I talk about it, I gain more strength. And I feel like the more I talk about it, the more I can put it behind me in a way. When it comes to even just forgiveness, I just was able to forgive this man who has now passed away. But like, you know, for me, I forgive for myself. You need to move on from your past. And it's like, I can't let that define who I am. But at the same time, you know, it's made me the strong woman I feel like I am today.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind. So take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. I'm talking with Cheryl Burke, one of the top dancers on the hit TV show, Dancing with the Stars. Cheryl has gotten to a place where she has forgiven her childhood abuser, but that trauma made a big impact on her early romantic relationships.
You mentioned also the abusive relationships that you had as an adult that were, you know, a couple years long, and those most likely coming from the abuse that you experienced as a child. What were those relationships like?
So I experienced these relationships in high school. So I had one for 2 years, and then I had another one. I had another boyfriend for 2 years. And then I moved to New York after I graduated. And I noticed that I also had my dance partner who was abusive as well, but not to the extent of my high school life. But I just noticed that I was addicted to I felt like it was another type of brainwash. It was another type of grooming in a way, where these guys would make me feel like I was nobody without them. You know, going back to that time when I got sexually abused led me to dating abusive men. And it was because of my self-worth. It didn't exist. And I used to be the girl that would be turned off by nice men. You know, I needed to be treated like crap in order for me to feel like, oh, this is the man of my dreams. You know, I didn't know that there was another side, but then I also knew it wasn't the person, it was me. I didn't love myself. I was in desperate need of wanting to be loved and going anywhere but with myself to find that.
And would you say that you still feel anger or blame towards them, or have you forgiven them as well?
I've totally forgiven them. Yeah. That was the easiest one, which is weird.
Oh, will you tell me about that? How is that the easiest one?
Because I was able to take responsibility, but like without blaming myself. And also because it's not like I forgave them because I was like, oh, I'm blaming myself, it's my fault. You know, I was able to make my own decisions, but also I feel like in order for me to accept people in my life in general, like Matt, being able to accept people who are nice and kind and not thinking that that is a turnoff or how weak you are or being vulnerable, I had to forgive that chapter of men, of that like cycle of and pattern of abusive men. I just knew that in order for me to not be turned off by someone being nice to me, I had to forgive them.
Did any of them ever come to you and ask for forgiveness, or was that just something that you did on your own?
That was something I did on my own. I mean, like, I think when I would break up with like my ex-boyfriend, he would like try and find me and then apologize. But it wasn't like the sorry that, you know, after some time, they came to me and said, oh, I'm so sorry for what happened. It would be like while we were still in that breakup. So it was still unhealthy, toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Normally I would come crawling back because I liked that feeling of like wanting to be wanted.
After working through forgiveness with her abusers and her father, she was ready to tackle forgiveness in one of her closest relationships, the one with her mother.
Obviously, I blamed my mom for everything. And we went through intense therapy as well. And we're just starting to build our foundation, like without us being involved as business partners or whatever, like just a pure mother and daughter relationship.
That's amazing that you guys are doing that work together. What has that experience been like?
Oh, girl, it's emotional, you know? And it's like my mom coming from like the Asian culture, just showing emotion in general isn't easy for her. And let alone just accepting responsibility for certain things. Like, you know, my mom is this powerhouse of a woman and, you know, she made her life for herself and she got like her MBA in business and she just, you know, turned her life around and brought all of her brothers and sisters with her to the States. And like, but with that, you know, comes like 24 hours of constant work. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I didn't really have guidance, but yet, you know, my mom was all obviously just trying to put food on the table. And because of her is the reason why I'm dancing, you know, like it's not a cheap sport, you know, dancing. When I started ballroom dancing, I had a lot of older friends, you know, so I was always looking for like someone to fill that mommy void of like, it's not even necessarily of being like a mother, but it was like, I could tell it was the affection I was craving. I was craving like, you could tell when someone was hugging you, let's say, or just like patting you on the back, right? And my mom's the patter on the back. And it's like, I needed to stop blaming her. I needed to stop also saying, oh, well, you don't love me because you're not really hugging me or you're not really showing emotion. Like you're so cold. And it's like, really, I just needed to accept the culture and her belief system. And just to even know that, you know, helped me be able to forgive my mom and just say, well, that is her. It is all her. Like anything that she, whether she is cold in her response or she is very much like a businesswoman. So like, even when she used to check my homework as a kid, like I had to come down to her office and it was like behind the desk. And it was like, she never like tucked me in to bed and read me a bedtime story, you know? But again, this has nothing to do with me. It wasn't because she loves me less. It's just that it was just the culture that she was raised in. And I took it so personally. I think also I have to say that what really, really made my mother not take responsibility, but be able to apologize for once. Like, I just wanted to hear her say, I'm sorry for not being there. Like, she never said that to me. And I was watching that Oprah special when they were talking about Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I think she had a show where the victims were involved. So my mom, you know, seeing other moms that were mothers of the victims involved, basically, you know, pour their hearts out in a way, really woke her up. And then she finally, because she never knew the detail behind of what happened. I can tell that she had to go through this process of forgiving herself or owning up to it. And I'm so grateful and I'm so blessed that she was able to not only put food on the table, but support my love for dance. Because of how she was so hard, she was a hard working woman, you know, and I wouldn't have been able to do any of that without that. But I also would love for her to be curious as to what happened. But I know now that it was the guilt that she just couldn't live with herself. And so she finally, after watching that show, she emailed me and she wrote me a long, long email just apologizing. And that right there was just like, that was it. Yeah. I feel like I like thousands of pounds of luggage just like totally gone. I have a question actually. Why did you decide to write a book about forgiveness?
I had a crazy falling out with one of my best friends when I was in my mid 20s, and I hadn't really before that taken inventory as to what forgiveness even meant and what the role of it was in my life. And that to me really took me, the experience of going through that big friendship falling out kind of took me back to all the different situations in my life where I felt I struggled with forgiveness and actually never was able to forgive. And so I became really interested in it. And I was kind of going to different books and trying to go to churches and to therapy and to just seek more information out about forgiveness. And I felt that the most helpful guidance came from talking to other people and hearing their forgiveness journeys and being able to apply you know, their nuggets of wisdom and their experiences to my own, and also knowing that while we don't talk about forgiveness ever, because mm-hmm. it's not like a beautiful or glamorous topic, that it is something that, you know, none of us are spared from coming face to face with at some point in our lives.
Totally. I think it's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And I also think in general, just like the, you know, people say, oh, mental health, like it's a cool thing right now. But like within mental health comes all these different branches, you could say. Like I know Brene Brown, I'm not sure if you're familiar with her, but she talks about like just like shaming and the power of vulnerability. It's like there's so much to talk about with just that one word, you know, and I feel like that's what people like you that do such great work is, it's fascinating to me because it's like we need to be educated on just what the hell that one word means.
I feel really grateful that you came on this podcast to talk about it because I think it just is so helpful to other people to be able to hear, you know, your forgiveness experience and just how much forgiveness has impacted your life. So thank you so much for taking the time to let me talk to you.
Well, thank you for doing this. Thanks for the therapy session.
I know it is. There are always therapy sessions when you're talking about forgiveness.
Thanks for tuning into this episode, and thank you to Cheryl Burke for sharing your incredible forgiveness journey and all the hard-won wisdoms you've gained along the way. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, also called The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This show is produced by Monique Laborde, sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway. This podcast is produced in partnership with Cadence 13.